I'm Tom Maloney, and for Dee Dotson, this is Lakeshore Update. This week on the show, we'll bring you the latest on Governor Eric Holcomb's plan to get Indiana back on track. Air quality in Lake and Porter County has gotten better, and we'll find out why. Heavy waves and erosion are battering Beverly Shores. U.S. Steel is planning layoffs, and Justin Hicks will have the latest on Indiana's unemployment numbers. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Governor Eric Holcomb announced on Friday his five-stage plan for reopening Indiana amid the coronavirus outbreak. Until Monday, May 4th for the entire state and May 11th for Lake County and Marion counties, we're in stage one, which includes social distancing, only essential workers at offices and construction sites, and no social gatherings. Beginning May 4th, stage two is underway for Porter, LaPorte, Newton, Jasper, Stark, and Pulaski counties in northwest Indiana, but again, not until May 11th for Lake County. Stage 2 includes lifted measures for the stay-at-home order. Manufacturers, industrial operations, and other infrastructure that has not been in operation may open following OSHA and CDC guidelines. About half of the state's Bureau of Motor Vehicle branches will open with services by appointment only. The remainder of the branches will continue to open over the next 2 weeks. Public libraries may open according to their own policies and CDC guidelines. Social gatherings of 25 people may take place following the CDC social distancing guidelines. This limit applies to such events as wedding receptions, birthday parties, Mother's Day gatherings, and others where people are in close physical contact for extended periods of time. Essential travel restrictions are lifted, including non-essential local travel being allowed, but Governor Holcomb recommends that individuals should continue to remote work whenever possible. Religious services may convene inside places of worship, including weddings, funerals, and baptisms. Retail and commercial businesses, including those that have been open for the necessities of life during the previous executive orders, may operate at 50% capacity. Shopping malls may operate at 50% capacity, with indoor common areas at 25% capacity. Personal services such as hair salons, barbershops, nail salons, spas, and tattoo parlors are by appointment only with operational limitations. Employees must wear face coverings, workstations must be spaced to meet social distancing guidelines and other requirements as necessary. Restaurants and bars that serve food may be open at 50% capacity with operational limitations, though bar seating will be closed with no live entertainment allowed. Servers and kitchen staff must wear face coverings. For a comprehensive list of what's open and closed, please visit backontrack.in.gov. Indiana officials say they are doing all that they can to stop the spread of the COVID-19 virus at a prison in northwest Indiana. About 130 inmates have tested positive at the Westville Correctional Facility in LaPorte County. Prison officials say it's not possible to test everyone at the prison, so they're only testing those who show symptoms. Michael Puente has more.
130 inmates at the Westville Correctional Facility in LaPorte County are now confirmed to have the virus. The infected inmates, about 4% of the total prison population, are being quarantined in one prison section. Dr. Christine Doss, Chief Medical Officer of the Indiana Department of Corrections, says it's not possible to test everyone.
The test is more valid and accurate when symptoms are actually present. So testing an entire facility, testing 3,500 offenders, just is not the best use of resources.
Loved ones of inmates have been calling for more testing. Some plan a drive-by protest near the prison later today. I'm Michael Puente.
One of the nation's largest steelmakers expects to lay off roughly 2,700 employees as the demand for iron and steel drops during the coronavirus pandemic. Pittsburgh-based U.S. Steel announced its plans Thursday. That's the same day it reported a first quarter loss of $391 million. The company had about 27,500 employees as of last year. It did not say where the layoffs would be, but said it would also temporarily idle two blast facilities. They are in Gary and just outside of Pittsburgh. The firm has now idled seven of its 10 blast furnaces in the U.S. Waves from Lake Michigan have washed away a section of pavement in Beverly Shores, threatening utility lines and nearby homes. Rangers with the Indiana Dunes National Park stood guard Thursday at a sharp cliff overlooking Lake Michigan that was once parking for Lakeview Beach. Beverly Shores Town Council President Jeff Benson told the Times a section of the roadway near that location has been closed for the past month. Bruce Rowe, the park's supervisory ranger, says a significant piece of pavement has been lost. You're listening to Lakeshore Update. I'm Tom Maloney, in for Dee Dotson. Authorities say a head-on collision in northwest Indiana has killed three young people. Police say each of the victims in the crash Thursday afternoon on Indiana 130 in Porter County were from Valparaiso and all riding in the same vehicle, a Ford Focus. The Porter County Coroner's Office says 17-year-old driver Matthew Shupp and 20-year-old front seat passenger Morgan Rod were pronounced dead at the scene. The Cook County Medical Examiner's Office says 20-year-old backseat passenger Olivia Ogigo later died at a Chicago hospital. Police say Shupp veered left of center for an unknown reason and struck an oncoming semi-trailer. Some parts of Indiana that have struggled with pollution are now meeting federal air quality standards. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, officials with the Environmental Protection Agency say that's good news for people with asthma and other lung conditions.
When two coal plants in the Indianapolis area switched to natural gas, that decreased harmful sulfur dioxide in the air. That means the Indianapolis metro now meets all federal air quality standards. So does the Muncie metro area, largely because Exide Technologies, a battery manufacturing plant, cut its lead emissions in half. Janet McCabe directs Indiana University's Environmental Resilience Institute.
One thing you can take from it is that you can actually improve air quality in our cities. And when you burn less fossil fuels, the air will get better.
Lake and Porter counties also decreased the amount of ground-level ozone in the air. EPA says that's because industrial companies reduced their emissions, but also because car emissions went down there and in nearby Chicago. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
Vice President Mike Pence was back home again in Indiana Thursday to visit a General Motors plant in Kokomo. The auto manufacturer, in partnership with medical device maker Ventec, is producing 30,000 ventilators to help combat the COVID-19 pandemic. Pence met with company leaders and factory workers, describing what he saw at the Hoosier facility as, quote, inspiring. One GM worker, a 43-year-old veteran of the company introduced only as George, told Pence he delayed his retirement to help make the ventilators.
We move roadblocks. Any little roadblock gets in the way, we just move along, we move along, we move along. And I have never seen anything like it in my life.
Another worker, introduced as Erin, says she and her fellow employees are on a mission.
We want these ventilators to get out to the people that could be our parents, could be our children, could be our neighbor. You know, you think about that when you're in the manufacturing. You want to make sure that you're putting your all.
Pence did wear a mask when touring the facility after he was criticized for not doing so earlier this week at the Mayo Clinic. You're listening to Lakeshore Update. I'm Tom Maloney, in for Dee Dotson. About 57,000 Hoosiers were among the 3.8 million Americans who filed to receive unemployment benefits last week, according to the Department of Labor. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the trend is continuing downward since the state's stay-at-home order in March.
The Department of Workforce Development began allowing self-employed workers and those with short work histories to file for pandemic unemployment assistance this week. It says over 65,000 have filed for that program successfully. The department also says it's working with state agencies to develop a strategy to offer job training. Due to state and federal unemployment laws, DWD Commissioner Fred Payne says if someone receiving unemployment benefits is called back to work as companies reopen, they will have to return despite health concerns they may have.
Now, generalized fear of the virus itself would likely result in benefits being denied.
Workers who are asked to return and receive reduced hours may still be eligible to receive benefits to compensate for the lost income. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
Indiana is making two significant changes to a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, often called food stamps. One of those changes is temporary during the COVID-19 crisis, while the other is permanent. First, families with children who are currently eligible for free or reduced price school lunches will now get money through SNAP.
For households receiving SNAP benefits, the additional benefits will be added to their existing EBT cards. Households not currently receiving SNAP benefits will receive a new pandemic EBT card in the mail with benefits automatically added. You don't have to do anything to receive these new benefits.
That program will end once the public health emergency has passed, but beginning in mid-May, the state will launch a new permanent SNAP benefit. Hoosiers in high-risk populations, such as seniors, will be able to get their groceries delivered to them using their SNAP benefits. Sullivan says SNAP applications in Indiana have increased 253% since the pandemic began. Indiana voters can now submit online their request for a mail-in ballot for the state's June 2nd primary election. The request form was posted online Tuesday on the state's voter registration site, indianavoters.com. The electronic form submits the ballot request to election officials rather than voters having to mail the ballot application form to their county election office. Election officials are promoting mail-in voting as a way to protect the safety of voters and workers at polling sites by reducing the amount of in-person voting. The primary was delayed for 4 weeks because of the coronavirus outbreak. The deadline to register for the spring primary is Monday. You're listening to Lakeshore Update. I'm Tom Maloney, in for Dee Dotson. An NCAA study group is proposing college athletes be paid for third-party endorsements. Adam Pinsker tells us the recommendation comes with some restrictions.
The proposal allows athletes in all divisions to profit from their images through business endorsements and social media. The athletes would not be able to use branding from their teams through these endorsements. IU Media School Associate Professor Galen Clavio says athletes would also not be able to endorse certain products or services.
There was a recommendation that things like alcohol, tobacco, sports gambling not be allowed.
Clavio believes the NCAA is considering this measure to get ahead of individual states which have passed laws allowing athletes to profit from their likenesses. The proposal would need to be approved by the entire NCAA governing body and would likely not take effect until the 2021 school year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Adam Pinsker.
Protesters across the state gathered in car caravans Friday in response to claims of exploitation of undocumented workers during the pandemic. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports they're demanding protection from deportation and access to stimulus aid packages.
The Cosecha movement organized the demonstrations in Indianapolis and Elkhart. Participants hung banners from their cars and honked horns as they drove around the state capitol and manufacturing facilities in Elkhart. They say immigrants are facing layoffs with no access to unemployment benefits or other ways to supplement lost income. Jose Alvarez was one of the demonstrators who drove in the Elkhart caravan. He says many undocumented workers have been essential in keeping a steady food supply and critical manufacturing plants open throughout the COVID-19 pandemic.
We believe that their work really matters, and we also believe that without their contributions, Indiana's economy and the nation's as a whole would suffer.
After the Elkhart rally, organizers vowed they would continue to pressure state legislators into creating protections for immigrants. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
A coronavirus outbreak at the Tyson Meatpacking Plant in Logansport has turned Cass County into the state's third biggest coronavirus hotspot behind Marion and Lake counties. But Cass is rural and only has one hospital. Reporter Mitch Legan traveled to Logansport to see how they're preparing for an expected surge.
Logansport's a city known for its early 1900s dental carousel, one of three in the country designated National Historic Landmarks.
The Cass County Dentsel Carousel is having a carousel fun day Saturday, August 26th at Riverside Park in Logansport, Indiana. This unique event with free admission will start at 8 a.m. with a 5K run. Performers.
Now, with the coronavirus pandemic in full effect, Riverside Park is quiet and the carousel's off limits, and Logansport is in the national news. But not because of the vintage carousel. On Monday, Cass County officials announced an order tightening distancing regulations on businesses after the county reported more than 700 new cases of COVID-19 over the weekend. That gives the largely rural county the third highest number of cases in the state. Logansport Mayor Chris Martin took action.
The magnitude of our current situation is extremely serious at this point, and we as a community must take action. This is not a time to place blame or point fingers. We need to come together as a community and do everything we can to slow the spread of this virus.
Last week, Tyson Foods temporarily shut down its Logansport meatpacking plant after more than 140 employees there tested positive for COVID-19. Logansport Memorial Hospital press person Carmen Jones says of the county's 1,214 confirmed cases, over 1,000 can be tied to the local Tyson plant. Hospital CEO Perry Gay says hospital staff and administrators have been preparing for weeks, but with more than 1,000 cases diagnosed in Cass County and more to come, all they can do at the county's only hospital is wait.
With this surge in positive cases and the numbers that we are seeing, if we just saw 5 to 10% of those positive cases needing critical care, we would be overwhelmed. Our hospital is not equipped with enough staff or resources to care for numbers like this.
Gay says Logansport Memorial participated in a study last month that estimated when different counties might hit their coronavirus peaks.
Our peak at that point was looking about May 3rd. So at that point, we were thinking, well, we're doing pretty good because I don't think we're ever going to reach our peak. Now it seems like we're actually going to pretty much hit that number. If I had to guess, I would say that the beginning of next week is when we would hit our peak.
Logansport Memorial Hospital has 83 total beds. The coronavirus unit has 9 rooms, all of which are currently in use, with a capacity of 13 beds. It also has another intensive care unit with 6 beds that can be used for COVID patients, bringing the total available beds to 19. Gay says other floors can be turned into coronavirus units as a last resort, and the hospital has around a dozen ventilators.
Now, when I say around, you would think that we would have a definitive number, but there are some other ways that we can utilize maybe anesthesia machines to serve as vents should we get into a critical point. But we have right now standard ventilators, 8, and then we can go up to 12 with the repurposing of anesthesia machines.
If the caseload becomes too much, patients could end up getting sent to hospitals in surrounding counties, including ones in Lafayette, Kokomo, and Indianapolis.
Looking at, would you be able to accept our patients should we get overrun with the very critically ill? That way we can kind of keep the mid-level coronavirus, people who do need hospitalization, but the ones who really need more critical care, start transferring those people.
Gay's been in touch with state officials, including Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box. He says the state has been helpful, sending personal protective equipment like N95 masks and hospital gowns, but staffing could still be an issue.
Right now, we're at a deeper place in this crisis than we ever thought we would be. Now it's looking like we could even get into a deeper hole. So we want to make sure that we are prepared for the influx of patients that hopefully won't come, but we are doing the math.
Logansport Memorial Hospital remains open for non-COVID-19 cases. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Mitch Legan.
The Food Bank of Northwest Indiana has some big partners that are getting involved in the next way that the food bank, as well as looking for other ways to support organizations in Northwest Indiana as we deal with the coronavirus pandemic. They have a big project coming up on Tuesday of next week. Let's find out more about it. Allison Vo is the Director of Development for the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana, and she's with us from the office in Merrillville. Allison, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Chris. It's my pleasure.
Well, tell us a little bit first about the idea behind what is called hashtag Giving Tuesday Now, which is what's coming up on Tuesday of next week.
Sure. We are super excited about it. So Giving Tuesday Now emerged because of the COVID-19 crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The original Giving Tuesday happens the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, but this is growing to become a national movement to encourage individuals, corporations, and all kinds of different entities to really throw their support to nonprofit organizations who are trying to manage the just the unforeseen circumstances that are happening during this time. So the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana decided to host what we're calling Extravaganza, and it's on Tuesday night from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we have more than 200,000 eggs, dozens of eggs that we are distributing really to anyone in the community. They're not just limited to individuals. We've had some agencies and pantries reach out and ask if they can come and get dozens of eggs for the people that they serve. And yes, they're more than welcome. We're distributing eggs to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We are working with our partner, Dutch Farms. Dutch Farms is actually providing all of the eggs, and we have more than 200,000, so what we're hoping is that by midday, halfway through the extravaganza event, that if most of those eggs are gone, Dutch Farms is going to go and get another truckload, and we'll distribute some more. So when we say that we have eggs for everyone, we really do mean it. We're encouraging our entire community to come out, take advantage of this really generous gesture by Dutch Farms to grab as many eggs as they need to feed their families, feed themselves and their families.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know that that Dutch Farms is a very big concern, deals with not only with dairy and with deli, with meat and bakery products. In fact, they're in every store here in Northwest Indiana. You'll see their products there all the time. But how did they get involved with this particular project when you have tens and tens of thousands of eggs to give away?
Dutch Farms has been a longtime partner of the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana and an avid supporter of Northwest Indiana and other communities as well. So Dutch Farms throughout, prior to the COVID-19 crisis, I mean, throughout the history of the food bank, has always donated products and participated in numerous ways to ensure that we have what we need to feed individuals and families who are struggling with hunger. So when Dutch Farms shared with us that they wanted to do something significant to really help the community, we talked through how that could happen. And this Giving Tuesday now just presented an opportunity for us to do that. And so we are just truly excited about the opportunity to give back. We, the Northwest Indiana community and beyond, has been really generous in helping us to meet the demand for food during this time. They've been giving us resources and all kinds of support to help us do that. And now we want to give back to the community, along with Dutch Farms and along with the Times of Northwest Indiana, to our community in a big way. We are really hoping that this will just create significant impact with what we're going through right now.
Now, Allison, with this next event coming up on Tuesday the 5th, as we call it, it's going to be hashtag Giving Tuesday Now. It's going to be the big egg extravaganza. Well, that's a great name for something like that. And we're dealing with tens of thousands of eggs. Tell us about the particulars for what's going to be set up there at the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana, there along Broadway in Merrifield, and how people that want to be able to pick up some eggs can do so.
Definitely. So we are hosting it as an all-day event to eliminate the need for any lines or any congestion. At 9 a.m., we are going to be set up in our parking lot, and we are committed to practicing social distancing and enforcing safety precautions during this time. So we're going to have about 5 tent stations where cars can just drive into the parking lot, come up to the tables, which will be social distance as well, check in, and just grab as many eggs as they need. It really is that simple. There's nothing required. We won't be going in and out of the building. It'll be, and people can come back as many times as they need to. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we have more than 250,000 eggs, and then access to others if we need them, if we happen to run out during that time. It'll go from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and throughout that time, we're just hoping that the community comes and gets the resources, the food resources that they need for themselves and their families.
Now, besides Dutch Farms actually participating with bringing the eggs and helping to distribute them, I know one of the other partners involved is the Times of Northwest Indiana. How are they linked into all of this and making sure that folks that need the eggs during this pandemic can get them?
The Times has been such a tremendous partner throughout the years, sharing their media resources and their audience with us. One of our board members is an employee of the Times, mm-hmm. and always connects us in really creative and impactful ways. And so it just made sense that the Times would be a partner for this event. When we share the extravaganza event, they offered to do some media and some publicity for the event as well.
Well, Allison, we'll have to leave it at that here. We appreciate you giving us the update, and we're looking forward especially to the Eggstravaganza, which is coming up next Tuesday, May 5th. It's going to be an event that's going to be at the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana in the parking lot starting at 9 a.m. and until 6 p.m., and thank you for the update, and we'll be back with you again for seeing how things are in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's Allison Vo. She's the Director of Development for the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana.
For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.